Welcome to the Curious Women Podcast. I'm your host, Kylie Fignano, and I'm here with my co-host, Meg Hager. Here, we're going to have chats about women's health to teach you the things that you didn't know you didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, people usually have these conversations about dogs, and I'm like, yeah, I don't care that much, but would you like to talk about rabbits or chickens? <It's not my jam.
laughs> Krista, anytime you want to talk about rabbits, you call me up. I'm happy. Bunny mama chats are my favorite.
It's good. I don't know too many people with rabbits.
I am really excited that we just were able to have such content, unexhausted content about rabbits.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
We went from rabbits to corn mazes.
It makes me happy.
I'm not sure you even need. I'm not sure we even need to talk about eczema. Ooh,
that's all we've got here. Enjoy your day, Krista. See you later.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Ooh, buddy.
Krista, are you drinking anything fun over there?
I had some orange juice and some wild berry aloe juice, and now I'm just stuck with water because I was in a hurry to get here. So.
Wildberry aloe. That sounds yummy.
I know. It was in the store. I walked in and it was at a good price point. I was like, I will take some of this.
That sounds really good.
So usually I'm like a potassium freak for a lot of reasons. And yeah, I'm just drinking water. I'm actually quite disappointed by this choice.
What are you drinking, Meg? Ovacetol?
You know what? I had my Oh, no. I do. I still have it in my tea. Yes. My Ovacetol and my ginseng tea we have. But today, I also made a smoothie. I have been loving this smoothie. Can I tell you? I did.
You can.
What's in here now? This is unsweetened acai puree.
Oh.
I found like cooked beets, like pre-cooked beets that I could just keep in the fridge. Yum. So I just like chop one of those up, throw that in there. Ginger, almond butter, soy milk. I think that's it.
Yum.
Protein powder. There's protein powder in here too. Oh, it is so good. At first I put like a date or two in there too, but it doesn't even need it. That's so good.
That sounds yummy.
Yeah. So that's what I'm drinking. What are you drinking, Kylie?
You know what I'm drinking.
I have a list of things I think you're drinking. Possibly. I knew I was going to say Olipop.
It's always Olipop.
They really need to sponsor us. Somebody needs to tell Olipop to send us a line because
it's not even hard. I'm not even like going above and beyond to try to be obnoxious about it. It's just genuinely what's always happening. I love it so much. I mean, 9 grams of fiber. I just can't, you can't, it's not.
It's such a health food.
That's incredible.
Such a health snack. I can't help myself.
So Krista, can you tell us who you are and what you do, and just give us a little intro for our listeners who aren't familiar with your work, and then we can dive into like really picking your brain and getting the show on the road. I am so excited.
Sure. All right. I'm here for any weird question. If you have a weird question, the weirder the better. For me, I feel like I have a lot of useless eczema knowledge.
I can't wait.
Get that out into the world. My name is Krista Bigler. I am an integrative dietitian. I work on helping people overcome food sensitivities without food restriction or unnecessary food restriction to reduce inflammation, fatigue, and of course, food sensitivities, gut issues, and skin stuff. I don't like put forefront all over my website that I work on eczema and skin issues because all those people seem to find me without any trouble for some reason. I think that's referral. Mm. So, or like podcasts like this or something.
Right.
So I've been running the Less Stressed Life podcast since 2017, which is for health savvy women or health professionals that just want, I mean, that's like the whole mission, right? That everyone deserves a less stressed life without food sensitivities, fatigue, and inflammation. So that's my shtick.
Oh my gosh.
And I talk a lot about eczema because I had eczema. Oh, I mean, I have the predisposition, you know, I don't really want to work on eczema, but someone said yesterday to me, your mess is your message. And I was like, that's such a beautiful thing to say. And isn't that the truth for most of us? And I would say that when you've had every single problem wrong, you have like this different type of empathy, ability to pick up on weird little things. You know, it's just different.
Yeah.
So in 2016, I had you know, what I call, I act just like every other human being. I would say, oh, I have this genetic dry skin, or it's just in the winter, or I have this flakiness right here along my hairline that just shows up sometimes. And that was how I talked about that in high school. I remember going to a derm. I remember getting Elidel, whatever. I didn't really do anything. You know, it wasn't like, I say it wasn't really affecting your life, but once you resolve a problem, you don't realize how much time you were like rearranging around it sometimes. Totally. And so I hope the short version of the story is I took my kids to swimming lessons every day for 5 days. And there is probably some details, but that was like insulting. Like it was like sent me over this like edge of had a lot of stress, was changing careers, young family, all this stuff. Mm. And I like woke up and my skin blew up. I had eczema all over my eye, all over my neck. Mm. It was a good time. It like hurt.
Yeah.
So it was a good time. I tried to work with a lot of different people. There's a lot of the same exact toolbox. So that was a bummer. Mm-hmm. So it took me about a year to clear that. I don't think it should take that long. I just could not find anyone to help me. And I just ended up having to dive into research eventually, heal it on my own. It sucked. It wasn't very good. But, you know, again, like your pain is what, like I tried to be grateful in the time because I knew it would be helpful. Yeah. So that's a little bit about me and why we're talking about
this. Krista, will you, I have several follow-up questions, but will you explain what eczema is? Because people who have it are going to know exactly what you're talking about.
Sure.
But people who don't and gratefully haven't had to have that experience are going to be less clear.
Yeah. They will kind of know because they know, they all know someone with eczema in some capacity. 10 to 20% of children have eczema. 1 to 3% of adults have eczema. And it's generally the overarching name. Sometimes we use the word atopic dermatitis, but it's the name given to a group of conditions that cause the skin to become like red, itchy, inflamed. There are several types or several names we use for it. Atopic dermatitis, or these are some types of dermatitis or eczema, contact dermatitis, dishidrotic eczema, numular eczema, seborrheic dermatitis, et cetera. So it presents in different ways. The problem is that we pretend it's all the same. It's not exactly all the same, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's similar, like there's common denominators, but I think the way it's styled on the body tells you which way to go first. So looks like redness, inflamed skin, and darker skins and melanated skin, it can look actually more dark or gray. Sometimes it gets misdiagnosed in darker skin types as a side note. So that's a thing potentially. And then our toolbox is a little bit shallow for it. What else do I want to say about it? I want to say that sometimes people, like there's a few major types of skin stuff. I'm guessing, you know, with Meg being a skin expert, you guys have talked quite a bit about this, but there's psoriasis, acne, eczema. Those are the main big ones, I would say. Maybe keratosis pilaris. What else? Am I missing any other main skin things? But then there's like a rash or hives. For me,
maybe rosacea.
Rosacea for sure. So like a rash or hives, you know, can be for me similar treatment as eczema. Or what else I want to say about this? In general, like if we agree like unanimously, eczema usually has, well, like conventionally, integratively, it doesn't matter. We agree that there's a staph overgrowth, topical staph overgrowth on the skin. So that's a characteristic of eczema more so, to my knowledge. And so, yeah, so this is something to consider because guess what? When you have topical staph on the skin, it's also inside your body growing to the outside.
Topical every single time. Staph on the skin. Okay, that's interesting. We're going to have to circle back to that. But first, I would love to have you explain when you were going through all of this, like your story, what did it look like when you had to do the dive into the research and actually get this healing for yourself because sort of the conventional options presented weren't cutting it. What did that look like? Because I assume this is very similar to what you end up doing with your client.
Well, that was a messy year, right? Because there was like, I didn't really want to be dealing with that. It was not what I wanted to be doing. You know, I actually made it worse in the short term. Maybe you guys can understand this. Clients do this as well. What actually happens first? And so I don't remember if I went to the regular doctor. I just don't recall. It was a long time ago because I know I'd been to the derms before. I just do not remember what I did dermatology wise or regular doctor wise at that time. If I'd gone, I'd just gotten a steroid. Duh. Like that's what you get. Mm-hmm. So, and that's why people sometimes are like, it's very dramatic when it goes from basically steroid is the treatment. And then they're like, you know, this isn't, steroid is essentially just suppressing inflammation. So it's just taking the batteries out of the fire alarm. But then when the next jump is like a biologic medication where you check your liver enzymes monthly, people are like, what? there's nothing in
for
between.
People who don't know what a biologic is, we're talking like a shot usually, right? Some kind of oral medication is what you're saying, right? Well, mm-hmm. steroid could be oral too, but I just want to clarify what a biologic is for the for those that don't know.
Yeah, it's some kind of immune modulating drug that's very expensive. Some kind of immune modulation.
Yeah, okay. All right.
That's what it is. That may have some other risk factors. And that's the thing with steroids. As a side note, you know, that's the toolbox conventionally. It's like, here's a steroid. We do have a few other, like sometimes if there's an infection that's raging. So if you have a topical staph infection, so we know that there's overgrowth mm-hmm. and then you scratch and then you move it to a different place and you translocate the bacteria again. So now you have eczema everywhere. Mm-hmm. And there's places where it shows up in kids versus adults and all these things, but you move it around, but then it can get like, you can get opened up. And when it's like red and raging and horrible, that is an infection, and that you will not heal from the inside, alone. You must deal with that infection topically. So sometimes you will get a topical antibiotic if you're lucky. Hopefully you're lucky and you get that, because you don't want to be having this raging, terrible topical staph infection. Mm. What I ended up doing was I was going to a variety of healers, integrative people, whoever, trying different things. And I was getting kind of a standard-ish toolbox, I felt. The standard toolbox can look like an omega-3, maybe a probiotic. I don't know. You know, you kind of just recognize it when you see it. I was doing a lot of different things. You try everything in desperation. I was very familiar with like energy medicine, muscle testing, all those things. And like, they were actually giving me similar answers that chlorine was a problem, that I had sluggish liver and all these things. So all kinds of crap, with not amazing results. One thing I did do during that healing time was I took one self day. I took a self-care day every month for a while. Like I went and got a massage and did all types of things, like just did crap like that, because if I live like 2 hours from a city, and so it would be like a day thing to do that. I knew at that time there was like, stress is usually always a factor with stuff. And then the next question is like, how did you heal it? Oh, the other thing I did was I was like kind of learning about, as a dietitian, I was learning about food sensitivities. Mm-hmm. This is really full circle for me. I was learning about food sensitivities. And what do you do when you learn about something? You're like very excited to do this test, because you think the test is going to be the answer. Tests are not exactly the answer if you don't understand the rest of your physiology. None of them are perfect. So I did this food sensitivity test, and I restricted the foods, and then I added them back, and I was a disaster. Like, I had sensitivities I'd never had before. I was like, I never reacted. Like, I was putting pecans in my mouth.
Oh,
and
my God.
I was swelling at that moment. I was like, I've never seen this before. So then I was in serious trouble. but clients do this stuff too. Like, you don't know that's going to happen until it happens.
No. And then you're told that it's going to be the end all be all, and this is going to be helpful. And of course they want to do that to feel better. And it,
right. It's a sad thing. And that's like literally like the entire piece of my practice now. It's like, can we actually not restrict your diet at all and get all the same? Like, I try to almost never restrict diet or modify. I would say restriction and modify temporarily. I try not to do that if like, there's different, you know, there's not a one size fits all necessarily for everyone. My whole thing is like, can we actually not restrict things? Because I see people who've already done that, and they're like, this is actually sucking the fun out of my life. And I'm like, me too. I also like birthday cake. So my goal is like, can I just correct this stuff without restricting that?
I have a question. I love that you asked, can we make this better? Can we improve this without restricting the diet? So can we? Like, I'm dying to know. Is it possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I actually try not to ever restrict diets. So a lot of times people come in and they've already got their own restrictions, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're looking to expand everything for the most part.
Yeah.
And then we can talk briefly about like gluten and dairy. You know, the reason that a lot of people react to those is because they've got gut issues. And in general, the quality and the types of things that we intake on those is like every single day. Like, if you ate broccoli every single day and you had a gut mess, you might have a broccoli problem. You know what I mean? But usually it's gluten, dairy. I mean, we also know that dairy can, like, it does create some mucus. It does cause some issues. We know gluten does have some potential issues in the gut. But it's really rare at the moment. Most of my diet, or most of my clients, have like a high quality diet, I would say also. So I just think, first, high quality. Second, like lots of good nutrients. A third, must digest them. And that's the main thing. People are having sensitivities. Like histamine pops up all the time with eczema. And it's histamine to me is not a food issue. It is a food issue temporarily. It's a gut and liver issue. You have imbalances that impede the ability for the enzymes that break down histamine, DAO and HNMT, to work. And then your liver is a bit sluggish, immature, can't do its job, whatever, and can't move out the histamine. It's just like estrogen, right? Like same stuff. It can't be broken down or eliminated properly because things are not working.
Okay, so that's a short answer to that question.
All of the food sensitivity pieces to anything, really, is not at the core, at the deepest level, actually a food issue. It's like these foods get pulled into a deeper, bigger, more complicated problem, and then sometimes need to be addressed in order to like pull back the layers, right? But ultimately, not going to get you where you need to go because the fuel to that fire is still burning underneath all of it, right?
Yeah. And I would say like mold is the worst. The point I want to say about mold exposure, and I just don't think we're going to get away from this. I think awareness is our best friend here. So you can try to avoid and correct. But if you're having some fungal or mold symptoms, you're going to have major food sensitivity issues because it's going to be oxalates, it's going to be histamines, and it's going to be all grains and coffee and chocolate, you know, which those, some of those overlap anyway. But I see when people go on AIP and they feel good, I'm like, well, your gut's not working.
Yeah.
Duh. You know, or do you have potentially some mold issues? Because if you already have mold inside of you and then you eat moldy grains, which, you know, the thing is like, you can have a capacity, like you can work with a little bit, you know, if your whole foundation in your body is not like affected, but if you've had an environmental exposure and it's like taking up residence in your body, your bucket becomes full and then you can't really handle the food-based source. So I would say that's the thing. It's like, sometimes you have to empty the bucket a little bit so you're not raging.
Because I think that was probably a lot for people who are not familiar with eczema to digest. So I want to just break it down a little bit in the sense that, backing up just a little bit about, like we talked briefly about the more conventional treatments for eczema and kind of like what it is exactly, the pathology of it and all of that. But that's not really the scope of that we talk about these kinds of things on this podcast. So as far as the more functional things or the things outside of the typical norm, triggers for the skin, if you have eczema, so far we've talked about food sensitivities, you mentioned oxalates, you mentioned histamines, and it sounds like that just depends on the person and their exposures. But you also talked about mold as a really common one. So in your practice, from what you see, are there other things that are kind of lesser known that people should be aware of if they're suffering with eczema, just that might be triggers? And I know this is very general and probably hard to answer, so broadly, if there's anything else that comes to mind, and gut health,
broadly. So first of all, if you have eczema, don't worry about oxalates. If you have like pain in your hands and it feels like something is sharp and pokey, or you have lichen sclerosis or vulva pain, maybe then care about it.
Got it.
And really, I say don't care about it. Care about mold. It's not going to fix your problem. Anyway, but for eczema, top 8 allergens are something to just be aware of at first, which is going to be what? Wheat, dairy, eggs, all the things, nuts. There's several of them. Top 8.
Fish.
Yeah, fish. Top 8 and histamines are going to be the main things that are going to struggle for eczema. But I subtype eczema in my own way. So that may be helpful if your eczema is like bright and red and spotted. It may respond a little bit. I really worry about this though, giving this conversation, because what I want to say, the caveat I want to say is that if you should not just like be restricting your food for a long time, like more than 3 weeks is too long. That's my suggestion. Like do it all at once. Don't be switching stuff around. I have a cookbook about this. I do not make any money off of this, but it was a top 8 and low histamine cookbook to say like, do this for 2 weeks all at once and then move on with your life if it does not improve. If your skin is like more dry and flaky, I think you need more liver support. And if your hands are inflamed, you were all stressed out. That's what happened there. And you have to do all the things, gut, liver, and stress. I think COVID increased hand eczema. And I think there's two pieces to that stress. You dump a lot of nutrients under stress, and those are all like every single case. It's like, oh, first I had eczema like this, and then I grew out of it, and then it came back, and then I had hand eczema. It's like, oh, it was stress. And they're like, yeah, it was. how did you know? I'm like, because it's always stress with hands. But with COVID, you used a ton of hand sanitizer also, and you stripped away the phospholipid membrane on the skin, which was antimicrobial. Like, it was your body's own natural shield for not letting overgrowth or like imbalances of bacteria and fungus and whatever take up residence on the skin. So you like, you know, killed all that all the time. And then it's like, here, this opportunistic bacteria is like, let me let myself in your dry skin here. And now I'm going to take up residence and cause some problems.
Well, hello.
Let me just march right this in there, bad bacteria. Yeah, well, hello. Yeah. Hey, I didn't notice no one was here.
So thank you so much.
My name is Staphylococcus aureus. How are you?
Staphylococcus aureus in the house.
I like that this is the march that Staph does.
I know.
For those of you who can't see us,
it's like the cha cha.
And you're listening to us on Spotify or something, please watch us on YouTube because you have to see this.
March. I highly recommend it.
Not that good. It's just like a roboto cha cha.
It's a great 30 seconds of entertainment. Just imagine. If you're having a rough day, come watch Krista do the eggs in the march.
The eggs in the dance.
You took us through what you typically see and what things you typically kind of target based on what the skin looks like. And we talked about some of the common things in the environment or food or, you know, just in general that could be major triggers for eczema. I'm sure that there are a lot of people listening and they're probably like, oh my God, like, what do I even do? I have eczema. I'm so confused. I don't know. And of course our answer would be work with Krista or like find a specialist who can actually help you. Right. Like that's the end goal. But we all know that's not always where people are at in the moment. So can you take us through some things in general? And they can be very basic if you think that they'll really help. But anyone who's having issues with their skin, specifically eczema, are there any baseline things that people can just make sure they're doing first before they decide if they need help or not?
Yeah, for sure. Because people always come like, I've done everything. And it's like, sounds like you changed your laundry detergent and your toothpaste. And that might have been it. People usually go through environmental toxicants first. They usually work on their environmental toxicants first. They may or may not take a probiotic. I don't really care if they do that. What I actually think you should do is we tend to think we know more about what's going on than we do, or we're not very good at like putting together the pieces on our own all the time. And so what I actually think you should do is a bullet point history of what you have going on. I think you should Google multiple symptom questionnaire and fill it out, because you don't realize what else. Like, you're like, oh, this thing on my skin or my face. And I call like eczema like, it's like the weight, it's like weight, you know, it's like visible. So people hate it. It's like the thing that pushes you over the edge. You can have constipation for your entire life. No one saw it.
Right.
So it wasn't a problem. You weren't covering it up with your clothing.
Such
so the eczema pushes you over the edge, but maybe you don't even realize that not pooping all the time was actually part of the problem, because your skin is an elimination mechanism as well as pooping.
Amen.
And urinating and sweating. So therefore, if you're not eliminating, where is that crap going to go? Mm-hmm. Pun intended, you know? So
absolutely.
Literally.
So Google multiple symptom questionnaire. There's a nice PDF that'll pop up. It'll auto-calculate it for you. You don't even have to do math.
It will?
And just start filling it in very honestly. Yeah, there's one from Mark Hyman or something like that. It'll pop up right away.
Great, okay.
And so you can fill that in. It's like going to rate, have you rate your symptoms in every system. And you're going to see what else you've got going on. And that's going to help you realize like, oh, maybe I do have some other things going on that also need to be improved. Because that's what I'm looking for when I talk to someone, is like, what could all be fixed? Because I don't want to just fix eczema. I want to fix like everything else as well. Otherwise, boring, right? Like, I don't have this, like, so dull to just fix eczema. It's like, you have to be able to focus on some other things also. You have to be able to, because some things are going to heal faster than skin.
Right. That's, I was actually, that happens in my practice a lot too, that I tell people as well. But one thing that I love about skin issues, and it goes back to what you were just saying, is that like, it's rarely, and you can correct me if you feel differently, but I think we're probably on the same page that skin issues are they're the symptom, and conventional medicine often treats them as a condition in and of themselves. Like, it's just an endpoint. It's like, oh, you have eczema. No asking why. It's just, oh, it's there. But what you're saying is eczema is a result of something else. It's a result of gut issues. It's a result of
sluggish detoxification, stress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So it's a result of those things. So I think that would be really helpful if you take nothing away from this podcast, but just to remember that your skin issue is a result of something else. So I really love your suggestion to Google the symptom questionnaire so they can start making connections, because that's the hard part. That's a great idea.
Right. It is. It's like you have to really, the first step in everything for me, this is my custom process. It's like awareness. You may do that through testing. People want to jump straight to like fancy stuff that they don't have to do on their own. They want to go to testing. Actually, what you should do is start with a bullet point of your history. When did this start? And just kind of start writing it out. And then do the multiple symptom questionnaire. Start to like make associations. Start to learn about this. Yes, you can work on your toxic burden and start reducing that. Great idea. And then for me, it's like then the next step is the work. And so there's like, you know, the awareness of the testing, whatever. And then it's the work. It's like, we've got to do stuff about it. Interventions, this is how long it's going to take, whatever. And in the end, the last piece, I think that I would like is empowerment. Did you catch the acronym? It's like, you should be in awe of yourself. It's like, I want you to know how your body works. So you're not just asking me like if something's okay for the rest of your life. You should know by the time you're done how things should work, right? Like I'm trying to teach you methodology, timelines, framework based on what you're doing and what you can expect. And then we worry if you're not following the timelines. Like if the timelines aren't working for you, we adjust, right? So I think
it's the maintenance piece.
Yeah. I mean, there is maintenance sometimes. Yes, for sure. But like my point is like, I want you to feel empowered once, like I always think you're in such duress when you're dealing with it. And it's like, it's so cool when you get to the other side and you see results, because experience is the best teacher. And so it's like, when you experience the results, everything will be fine. Like you will, like the questions will all dissipate. You'll be like, I get it. You know, I get it, how it all works now, you know.
And I've it's important it. For the longevity of all of the work that you spend doing things, trying things, shooting in the dark, actually working with somebody. If you get through all of that and don't know how to continue to keep that success on your own, like what have we really done here? We've like held your hand and given you no support or empowerment to be able to just get on with your life. Like, isn't the goal to put ourselves out of business, really? Like, we don't want you to need us. I want to teach you so that you know how to do this, right? I think that's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I look around and everyone needs help, so I doubt we'll be out of business, but I definitely don't worry about that whatsoever. But it's a matter of like your awareness is the first. If you don't have any awareness, like no one's going to convince you have a problem you don't think you have either. So I just think like cultivating awareness is you're going to be your best friend, and it's going to help you when you're in the midst of the work propel forward. And it's also going to help you not slide backwards, because your awareness. So like me recognizing little annoying symptoms, like, yeah, I got a mold exposure here. Dang it. You know, like I know what this is. So that is like being kind of extra aware, not crazy, but just like, yeah, you're not supposed to have sores around the edge of your nose. It's not normal. You're not supposed to have that. You know, like I know that that's a problem. So, you know, it's awareness, but some of the fun of our work is like helping put that together with someone, right?
You see a lot of your eczema patients have an issue with mold. Would you say like most or some? How prevalent?
I'm just having a moment with mold. No. I'm just having a moment with mold. Don't mind me. You know, if you have like major food sensitivities and allergies, I think it can be there. I think sometimes everyone has gotten lucky because mold is just an aggressive fungus. So sometimes when you're treating fungus because of symptoms, you're kind of accidentally taking care of it, at least surface level, but it can come back. And so all of my clients benefit from gut work.
Bingo.
And many benefit from liver work, and many benefit from working on stress and adrenals and all the things. And mold is just, it's just more of an aggressive fungus. So it just fits underneath the umbrella of gut work. I'm just kind of always listening for like, does this nuance this way? Are you extra sensitive? Like, does it feel like it's going this way? Cause it's just kind of it's an obnoxious burden that isn't going to go anywhere. So I'm just having a moment with mold. Also having a moment with sluggish thyroid. where I'm like, you know, these just like create relapse issues. So here's what my belief is: not testing for mold. It's too much work to do anything with it if you don't have proof of it. And so I feel like for the stamina of working on it for a handful of months, you should know if it's positive.
Right. Do you have any ways that you have your clients support their detox and support their gut? And again, I know it's all very individualized, but if you were to give a few examples of things that you really love recommending for your clients, is there anything specific that comes to mind?
I think it depends. But what I would say is I like to educate. So I like to look up people like, some people ask me these like very definitive questions. They're like, is my MTHFR the reason I have eczema?
No, ma'am.
In our group office hours. I was like, excuse me. Let me pull up a picture of how the liver works. And I would like to show you that there's three phases of detoxification. And you must have the phase three open first. And then we look at phase two and those nutrients there. And then we look at phase one. And if you turn up the hose and the hose is kinked, you know, phase three is blocked, it's going to be bad. And methylation, look at where he is. He's one conveyor belt on phase two out of like three phases. So he's 1/6 of 1/3 of a whole process. So yes, can be important. But also look at all of this. So if you just like look up that image, you'll see that B vitamins are important and glutathione is a master antioxidant and silymarin can be nice. And amino acids are key. Absolutely key for everything. And by the way, can you poop? Are you hydrating properly? Have you been sweating? I love infrared sauna. If you know, not the answer you were probably thinking. Love infrared sauna. It's a great way to get garbage out of the body. I actually cleared my skin 85-90% and it was still like rough and I could feel it. And people were like, oh, it looks great. And I'm like,
oh, wow.
It's rough actually. So, I got it the rest of the way from infrared sauna actually. So, I love infrared sauna from a detoxification standpoint. And I love doing things exogenously or outside of the body versus just taking supplements. And what I usually do with detoxification stuff is there's not a one size fits all. So I just pick something and then rotate after I'm done and see what works well. Choline, awesome. Super underrated, I would say. Yeah.
I love that.
Was that the question?
Yeah.
I hope I got it.
Yeah.
Or did you ask me about products for other things too?
No, I actually, exactly what I was looking for was, I also am a fan more so of the exogenous thing. So I was more looking for like lifestyle things, the sauna, the sweating, the bowel movements, like that's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make sure that's good first. And that's something people can do on their own without really messing it up, I don't think. So,
how long, and I know this is the answer to this is going to be, well, it depends, but if you could pick like a general frame of time, how long does it normally take people to be able to heal from their eczema? Just to give people a little, I don't know, hope, validation, hug, I don't know.
Yeah. So once I start a gut protocol, I want to see symptom turnaround within 2 to 4 weeks post full dose. That's my timeline. It may not be, I want to see like a decrease in itching, maybe better sleep, maybe other, this is why I want all the symptoms because some of them improve faster than others and it should be moving in the right direction. Yeah. Will your skin be clear 100%? No, not in 2 to 4 weeks. Sometimes it depends on if I did modify the diet more. Some people it's like too overwhelming. Like I need to meet someone where they are, definitely. And again, I'm not trying to, if they're already like restricting other things, I'm going to leave things right where they are. I may not modify anything. I'm going to, again, try to not modify anything and see if I can just get it done without any modifications because our diet is probably already healthy. And you know what? People really like this. They're like, thank you. I thought you would want me to go kill my rabbit. You know? No,
oh my God. My heart just fell out of my butt.
Sorry.
Oh, I'm dying.
2 to 4 weeks after you get on gut protocol stuff. Sometimes if there's like all these symptoms of my liver sucks before that, I try to start that earlier. Because if your liver sucks, it's going to take a little bit longer. If it's like just bright red splotchy eczema, it's like, we'll be fine. We can get over this relatively soon. Sometimes you hit a hiccup, right? Like, but within a couple of months, like I'd say the whole process is usually like 2 to 4-ish months. On like, I would say, I also believe that this is like lightning fast, just to be clear. Like it's
I'm
very
shocked.
2 to 4 months. It's way faster than I was thinking you were going to say.
If you're dealing with mold stuff, it's a minimum of a 4 month situation overall. But again, we just kind of like layer that in, deal with it. If you're dealing with stress stuff, so you may like heal and then you may pop up a little bit because you have like a, you know, the burden gets higher for some, because your life is, you went on a 4th of July vacation and all this crap happened and you may go backwards a step, you know, it kind of depends. But in general, I like to cruise. I think like 4 months to work with people is a really good amount of time for me personally.
Speaking of, how can people find you? How can they work with you? In what ways can they work with you?
Well, I'd love for you to go listen to the podcast if you want anyway, like if you just don't have eczema or if you just want to hear other cool things
about stress, please go listen to the Less Stressed Life
podcast.
I need that. I need your podcast.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a lot of, it's a lot of overarching stuff, and it's, I've really put a lot of like thought into it recently. Like when people ask questions, I'm like, I'm just going to go answer that on the podcast. Like we're going to have a little mini Q&A episode. Otherwise, so you can find me at lessstresslife.com or kristabigler.com. And so I've kind of streamlined everything, and it's like, I had a couple of different programs and they had different things and they were different lengths of time and included different things. And guess what? All that matters is that I have a problem and I want help fixing the problem. I don't care how long it needs to be or what it needs to be included. So I just kind of merged like what worked best overall and did one thing, and it feels like, oh, so nice. So I really like it. So there's one main way. Cause I'm like, you know, I just want it to be easy. Right. Like anyway, it's good. So I have one main way that you work with us. It's called Food Sensitivity Solutions and the Fatigue Fix. Some people are like, well, you don't really talk about eczema on here. I was like, oh yeah, I wasn't actually trying to find all of the eczema people, but like, half of my clients right now have eczema. at least, you know, they're definitely there. So
I think this is really helpful. Such a helpful conversation, just to give some comfort and clarity to those that might be struggling with eczema. We gave them a place to start. We gave them a place to go if they need more help. And I'm sure also, I think it's really cool to go through the basics and remind people that with a condition as complex as eczema, there's still some very basic things yes. that you can start doing right away. And I think that's really helpful. Oh, actually, totally. I do. I'm sorry. I know we were about to wrap up, but I do have one more question that I was dying to ask.
I totally do this kind of stuff. I'm like, wait, I forgot. It's very important.
If you could maybe briefly, if you can, just kind of give us some specifics on what you're looking for as far as diet quality.
Diet quality, whole foods, at least 5 cups of fruits and vegetables a day, half your body weight in hydration and minerals. So that's kind of my, like, it really is that easy. Okay. It's like, it does not have to be like some kind of bonkers, like diversify the colors of your plants but if you can't digest it, nothing really matters. And that's like, people think they can digest things, but they cannot.
Yeah. Yeah. Kylie knows that all too well.
People think they can digest it, but they can't.
Thank you so much, mm-hmm. Krista. It was so nice to have you on, and thank you for sticking around for an extra couple of minutes to clarify diet quality, because I was dying to know.
Well, it could mean so many things, but that's me. Mm-hmm. I'm like whole foods most of the time.
Birthday also cake from life. Time to time.
The end.
Exactly. Yes.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to Curious Women. If you love our show, you can support us by leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And if you know someone else who would really love our show, please share it with them too.